Hey everybody, this is So Many Sequels. I'm Josh.
I'm Garrett.
And I'm David.
Welcome to the show. It's the end of So Many Sweethearts Month. We got a big one today. Yep. We got a big one today because it's our audience pick, our fan pick. You guys voted for this over on Instagram and Threads, and we're gonna talk about it later. You've got mail. This is a classic. We've already talked about one other classic this month. Well, an undisputed classic anyway, When Harry Met Sally. The other two, maybe they'll be classics someday. Return to
Me. Hidden gem, for sure.
Hidden gem.
Hidden gem in a non-conventional, unconventional.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. It's just a really interesting movie for a lot of different reasons. But before we do that, let's kind of talk about what's been going on. You know, we haven't talked about what's been going on in, like, the movie world in a few minutes, I feel like. We talked about the strike when it was pretty ongoing, but it's been kind of, I don't really know what's been going on since then. But things are heating up with awards season. We've had the BAFTAs. We've had the SAG Awards. I think Oppenheimer won all of them everywhere.
All at once.
So that's interesting in the lead up to the Oscars, which is happening very soon. I think it's March 10th, something like that, early March. So excited about that. I wasn't kidding, though. Oppenheimer has been cleaning up. What do we think? Is it the favorite now for the best categories? Best picture, best director, best actor?
David, I feel like, you know, I don't want to say his name, but I'll say a theme song. And that all the other movies, they got no chance in hell, you know. They just don't. There's no chance. That's what they've got. Oppenheimer's going to win everything. And again, that for me just kind of sucks some of the fun away from it. But there are some competitive races. But yeah, I think that most things that Oppenheimer's nominated for, they'll probably take it.
To quote another term from the industry you're referencing, never say never is what I'll say.
This,
you know, there
fair.
Could always be... you never know with the Academy. Sometimes they make a weird decision out of nowhere. So I'll say it seems very likely. I mean, you know, if you're putting odds on it, high odds on Oppenheimer to not necessarily, I don't think sweep, but to take most of the big cat categories. But never put it past the Academy to, for whatever reason, pick a movie you weren't expecting. I don't know if it was expected for, like, Coda to win, but, like, you know, or Green Book or whatever, but, like, anything can happen. So we'll just see. But, you know, I think this year we've got a lot of great nominees for Best Picture. So I don't know if I'd be hurt with any of them.
Right.
But we'll talk about that probably more next week.
I can't confirm it, but I highly suspect that you all may have slipped a wrestling reference past me, but... I'll have to check that back in editing.
Very possible.
I was just going to say, it always does kind of take the sails out of the fun when it seems like a movie is just going to obviously win. Also, like that impact is lessened a little bit when I at least feel that, okay, it's deserved. I do think
sure,
it's deserved.
Sure, no, I'm not, yeah.
Like
not
sometimes
not,
it'll be a movie right. That's like, I don't think it should be that movie. But this, like you said, David, there's a lot of great picks here that I don't know if any of them would really upset too many people, except maybe the Maestro. just because,
like,
who saw that?
Yeah, I feel like the problem is, like, it is kind of like, oh, the Patriots won the Super Bowl again? You mean the best team in the history of the world won
the Patriots
again?
Wow, and the Chiefs and the Patriots
oh,
and
you
the
mean
Chiefs.
You're going to put... You're going to put one of the world's greatest directors in the book and put one of them in, like, the most historical things in the history of the world, and he does practical effects, and so he made this big giant thing that's really freaking cool to watch. Like, oh, and he won the Best Picture? How deserving. Like, that's
In terms of this award season, that's definitely the case. It's just been rolling and rolling and rolling. But in terms of some of the people involved, like, this will be the first awards for a lot of the people who are, like, I think it would be for Robert Downey Jr.'s first Academy Award if he were to win. It would be Cillian Murphy's first. It would be Christopher Nolan's first Academy Award if he were to win in either of the categories he's nominated in. I think the only time he's ever been nominated for an Academy Award was, I think somebody probably fact check me on this. I think he was nominated for Best screenplay for The Prestige, maybe. And he might have been nominated for something like visual effects or something with The Dark Knight. I mean, he's not technically.
I think he accepted on behalf
maybe Interstellar.
Heath Ledger. I think he was the acceptance speech on that one. But I mean, that's not him, obviously. But
right.
I heard that was the last time he was on the Oscars stage.
So, you know, this will be for the people who are involved. It'll be a momentous because, like, there's a lot of people who've said for a long time, like, Christopher Nolan's a good director, but he's not like a best picture director or a best director. You got
Lily Gladstone out there raking up things. I think it's going to be, I think she'll win, you know.
I know. We'll I feel like
that's one where Emma Stone could surprise everybody and win too. But I think it's up for Lily to take it, and that would be great.
And, you know, we're going to be doing our own special Oscar review and recap just after the show, or maybe the day after the show. I don't know. We'll find out. But as well as our own Oscar-themed month coming up pretty soon. Right, Josh?
Yep. We got a lot of Oscar stuff coming up. So be sure to follow us on social media for that. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, all those places. And those links are also at somanysequels.com. YouTube, subscribe to us on YouTube so you can watch the video version of the show. And leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you can help with that. That really helps the show a lot. Okay, that's all the not fun stuff. Let's go ahead and get into the movie. But first, we'll talk about the box office breakdown of You've Got Mail. All right, like we said, this week it's all about You've Got Mail. This movie came out in 1998. Stars the classic rom-com duo of Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. Letterboxd describes this movie as such. Someone you pass on the street may already be the love of your life. Bookstore magnate Joe Fox and independent bookshop owner Kathleen Kelly fall in love in the anonymity of the internet, both blissfully unaware that he's trying to put her out of business. A tale as old as time, I believe you've called it, David. How did the people respond to this? Was this a big hit? We know it was.
You know, it was. It was a pretty big hit. We have to go back to December 18th of 1998. It was a Christmas flick, if you can believe it. Christmas time flick, I guess we should say. Clearly not set at Christmas with all the references to, you know, New York in the spring. They do have a Christmas in the movie, though. So, anyway, You Got Mail opened in the number one spot with $18.4 million. That weekend, just ahead of the also debuting Prince of Egypt, which brought in 14.5. So actually a pretty good weekend for those two competitively. In the number three spot, you had Disney Pixar's A Bug's Life in its fifth week, bringing in 9.9. Here's a film we've reviewed before, is Star Trek Insurrection, perhaps one of the top two most boring Star Trek films there is. However,
no doubt.
Not without some fun.
That is.
Huh?
It was bad.
You watched it, Garrett. We watched it with you.
I know. I don't even remember which one that is.
That's how bad it was.
It's the one with the face stretchers. That's what I always called it as a kid.
Garrett, I wouldn't even know what to tell you to spark your memory. It was so forgettable.
Face stretchers.
It's the one where Worf gets a pimple. You remember?
Nothing happens. It's like just a long episode and not even a good one.
It's a really long episode. The best part, I think, in that whole movie is that they go to a part of the ship they never go to. They launch the captain's yacht. Like, there's like a little section of the ship
the
captain's yacht that can launch out. Never once shown in the show. Never even hinted at. Anyway. And then at number five, Jack Frost, starring... Kiefer, is it Kiefer in that?
It's Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton. Yeah, I knew he
was a snowman.
There's a key in the name. Keegan Michael Key, maybe. Anyway, so $18.4 million opening weekend. The movie did great during the holiday run, only dropping 1.8% in its second week, and then only dropping 20% after that. The movie would go on to make $115 million in the United States, $135 overseas for a worldwide total of $250 million on a $65 million budget. It was the number 14 movie of 1998. Number one movie in 1998 was another Tom Hanks film, Saving Private Ryan. Number two was Armageddon. Number three, There's Something About Mary. Number four, the aforementioned A Bug's Life. And at number five, The Waterboy with Adam Sandler.
Whoa. Didn't see that one coming. Also, I feel like it's a weird world where Saving Private Ryan and You've Got Mail came out in the same year. That,
right?
I agree.
Didn't ever. Nope. Doesn't seem right to me.
Doesn't seem right at all. You know, some other movies that came out that year, movies that we reviewed previously on that podcast, include Halloween H2O and The X-Files. The first X-Files movie came out that year.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the first movies we ever did here at So Many Sequels. You can go back and listen to Josh, Garrett, and Andrew's thoughts on The X-Files. A couple other movies came out that year. The Rugrats movie. Shakespeare in Love, which I think won the Academy Award that year. Over Saving Private Ryan. What else here? The Wedding Singer. The Wedding Singer and The Waterboy came out the same year. What do you think about?
That makes more sense.
And then Blade. I'm just going to throw out Blade also came out that year. Anyway, that's all I've got for your box office breakdown for You've Got Mail. So let's get into the show. I don't know about you guys. I had to just rent this movie. It's not available to stream anywhere.
All right. You've Got Mail. I'm excited about this one. I was excited about this one because it was our audience pick. We put this out on social media and everybody voted. And you know what? It was a really good vote. Mm-hmm. Not every movie, but there was a widespread of votes across this category, and I thought we might have had to have had a runoff at one point, but You've Got Mail did secure the bag in the end. So that's what we're talking about today, because that's what you all wanted us to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Ran away
just
with
to kind of start. Have we all seen this before? Was this anyone's first time watching?
It was my first time watching.
It was, David?
Mm-hmm.
It was
Mine
too.
Oh, I did not know this! Garrett, I could have sworn we watched it.
No, I believe that we watched Sleepless in Seattle because I did that for another
podcast. You're right. Okay, I remember watching that. Wow.
I had that same confusion, yes.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Well, what did you guys think of it then as a first time watch in 2024?
Hey, Garrett, what did you think?
You know, again, I see no reason. You know, I think we did When Harry Met Sally, and I had concerns that was going to be like this over the top kind of cheesy start of what I feel like modern rom-coms have devolved into over time. Uh-huh. And I think this was like the good version and the start of that, not When Harry Met Sally. I think that this is obviously, and again, for me, knowing a lot of this, but seeing it for the first time, I get, you know, where a lot of the tropes come from in modern little rom-com things. I think that there were some really cute moments, and I think that obviously Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan are incredible actors, and they have incredible chemistry. Obviously, they keep doing rom-com movies together around this time. I think they did like three together. And so they have that rapport where they just know how to work with each other and they're believable. I had some issues with a few bits and pieces of the overall story, some pieces that maybe don't hold up over time, but that doesn't necessarily have an issue or hold it against the movie, because I don't think it's done with poor intent. I think it's just the way it was in certain places, and now it's just like, oh, it's not great. So we'll talk about that. But overall, I felt like I really enjoyed most of it and found it very charming and very funny and kind of a throwback to old-timey rom-coms. So I thought it was a great pick by the audience.
That was an incredible breakdown. David, can you match that?
You know, yeah, at first I said to myself, oh, man, this may be more dated than When Harry Met Sally. That was what I thought at first when we start off with these, like, really blocky Google Map like technology for the opening credit sequence, and I was like, oh, is this gonna be one of those movies that just gets the internet totally wrong and just like stuff that like the internet, that's not how it works or something like that? And but you know, I was actually pleasantly surprised. The movie was I thought it was, you know, sharply written. I thought that the characters were engaging, you know, and there was, I think, a good job of writing an antagonism between them, a sort of understandable, justifiable antagonism for why they wouldn't necessarily get along. But at the same time, it was juxtaposed with this great online relationship where you see exactly why they get along when they aren't concerned about what other people might think. You know what I mean? This personal relationship via letters or via email. So I thought that, you know, I thought that was great. I thought the characters were fun. Tom Hanks is pretty funny in this movie at times. At other times, he's wildly condescending, but I wanted to get into that later. And then Meg Ryan, you know, there's a reason Meg Ryan's sort of like on probably the Mount Rushmore of rom-com leading ladies. I think she earned her spot with that. It is kind of interesting to think about the differences between 1998 and 2024. Is this conceptually even possible because of how like anonymity works on the internet today? What would be the, how would you do this movie today? Like what's the analog of, you know, anonymous chat and email? I mean, I guess you could probably find a way to do it, but I don't know if you could string it out for as long as this couple did. So yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I also, Garrett, had issues with sort of like the motivation for why certain things happen. But I don't think it took away from my overall appreciation. What about you, Josh? Okay. This is a multi-time watch for you?
Yeah, this is a favorite of mine. I've loved You've Got Mail for a while, so I've seen it several times. And I love it. I continue to love it. Yeah, you can see how it could be a movie that's like, oh no, is this going to be really dated now? But it's not so much, because it does kind of get, well, I think anyway, who am I but an 8-year-old in 1998? But I think it captures the spirit right and the world right, and kind of how people approached online relationships in those early internet chat room days. Because this is, you know, one of the first times that this concept of online dating is going mainstream in a big movie. You know, but what makes it still a timeless movie is that that aspect isn't the key component. Like, the relationship works regardless of it, and it's kind of still manages to play on tropes. You know, David, you mentioned the anonymity part, and that's exactly what I wanted to talk about, because of how different the relationship ecosystem is then versus now, because the internet was or could be anonymous then. You really can't do that anymore. It's very hard to be anonymous on the internet. To think that someone could go through this even is like, how could you not know it was him? It's hard to believe. But back then, maybe it was. So I thought that was fascinating. And another thing I wanted to mention on this real quick, just because this is what got my brain kickstarted on it, is, you know, sometimes when we watch these movies, I try to find some kind of YouTube clip behind the scenes or something. And this time I found something even better. I found a full episode of the Rosie O'Donnell Show from 1998 that was the You've Got Mail special, where cast was on the show, and they had these segments, like between the segments where they would do online polls. And again, this is like a 1998 AOL poll. And one of them was, how would you want to meet someone online? 6% said in an online dating club. 40 some odd percent said in a specialty chat room. And then the other 40 some odd percent said, I would never meet someone online in 1998. And I was right. Like, oh, these are real people back then. The movie got it right.
Well, I
think there's a trope, people who don't want to admit that they met their significant other.
Well, there was back then.
Dating app or whatever. But I'm saying that I still think there is now.
Oh, to some extent. I
think
strong. It's
obviously, I think that's the only way people meet people anymore most of the time. But I still think there's a certain percentage of people that are like,
there's still a stigma.
Let's come up
there
with
is.
A different story.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I that's also riddled throughout the movie. There's a lot of insecurities about. Like, I really love the part towards the end where she says to Joe, you know, oh, you're never going to believe. You'll never believe where I met him. And he's like, the internet. And she's like, how did you know?
How did you go? Yeah. Yeah.
And today would be like, oh, of course you met them on the internet. Yeah.
It's like.
Where else would you?
Oh, the internet. Well, yeah.
I know.
You know, I really appreciated that. they went that was a big part of it. Like, it was like, I loved when Steve Zahn's like, it could be this guy, the murderer that they just caught, you know, in the news. Look, he was arrested last night, you know, like, he didn't meet you. All that stuff. I love, you know, there's still a lot of insecurities you have today. Like, when you're going to meet someone who you haven't seen online, which is like not really doesn't happen anymore now, when you meet somebody online, like, that's their profile is right in your face, you see their photo, and you're just hoping that they're what they're representing. But yeah, back then the AOL, the chat rooms, you know, everything was hidden behind, you know, names, and there was no photos. Take forever to download a photo back then.
Yeah, the way this hit early was pretty nostalgic. Mm-hmm. For the dial-up modem, and then you've got mail
mm-hmm. yeah.
right out the gate. And I was honestly really happy that they didn't revisit that over and over. I was honestly a little concerned that every time they got mail, you were going to hear it because mm-hmm. of how the time was. And that was really wonderful to hear it that very opening segment, and then not hear it again until like later or something, whenever you're there was a moment specifically, I think, where they didn't have mail and I was expecting to hear it and I didn't hear it, and I was like, oh, and it hurt a little bit, made the voice a little character, and I appreciated that they didn't overuse that annoying sound.
Yeah.
You know, something, if I can, that I want to talk about that I really liked about this movie was, you know, this has been a long time. This has been a problem with films for a long time, and it's how to display or how to communicate text on screen. And there's been tons of ways to do it over time. You know, like if you're looking at a letter, sometimes you'll see the text then like written out, or the people will read it in their head. I thought this did a great combination of showing you what they're typing, but also using that internal monologue of Tom Hanks, of Meg Ryan, to articulate what they're writing as they're doing it. And it gives you, I think, a better window into who they are than if you were just watching them type or if it was purely in their head. Like, I thought that they did a great job of blending the two things. Because, you know, like, even today, when someone brings out a cell phone in a movie and you're having to, like, look at text on a cell phone, it's always, like, an awkward, like, I'm just looking at a phone. I don't like that, you know? So, like, I love when movies can find interesting ways to display text messaging or email or whatever it is. And I thought that this had that struggle early on, and I thought they did a good job of blending it with their internal monologue. Occasionally, when Tom is talking or Meg are talking, they'll be, like, typing, and then they'll just say, stupid. To die or whatever, like they just like do little, you know, out loud murmurs of what they're saying along with their narration.
I want to talk about the performances a little bit now. I want to start too with Tom Hanks, because he does play a really interesting character in this, where David, I believe you said he is very funny but then also very condescending. And I agree with you. There was a point in I wrote down, I took some notes during this one. What a pompous ass, LOL, is what I wrote. And I don't even remember what scene I wrote that at, but it applies to many of them. He's so unlikable sometimes as Joe. And I like that because I think he has to be for the audience. Because you don't want to like Joe as much as you like NY-152 until... Mm-hmm. Shop Girl does, right? At least that's how I think it works. But he does a really good job of balancing that, where you don't hate him too much, or he wins you back.
Yeah, I think he yeah. Go ahead, Garrett.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, very, you know, dickish in the realms of Tom Hanks characters. There was that boardroom scene. All the men in this movie, except for like Steve Zahn, sucked. I mean, they were just awful, awful. But like, duh, why not? That's accurate. So I kind of appreciated that. It was fun to see the dad from Christmas Vacation being like an old man boardroom, because I just imagine that person is still alive running most of the boardrooms. So, you know, it seemed pretty accurate.
Definitely, yeah. You know, and I, there's specifically the scene that stood out to me, and I'm going to hit two things here at once with Tom Hanks's character and being really very condescending, is the scene in the grocery store where Meg Ryan's character, Kathleen, has stumbled into the cash only line, and she has only a credit card. And like, she's like very patiently, very kindly trying to say like, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong line. Can you just make a exception? And Tom Hanks comes up, and I'm baffled by this. Tom Hanks comes up and is the most condescending person to this grocery store worker that I've ever seen. Like, he's like, hi, what's your name? Rose, is it? That's a very beautiful name.
Yeah.
And this guy goes, Rose. And he goes, and I'm Henry. He goes, nice to meet you, Henry. And he goes, Rose, this is a credit card machine, right? So are you going to run this card for us, please, Rose? Happy Thanksgiving, by the way. This is where you say Happy Thanksgiving back. And she goes, Happy Thanksgiving back. And he goes, so are you going to do it? She's like, okay. And I'm like, what? I mean, am I just out of my mind in terms of watching this scene? Because like, that would not fly in the New York that I know. She'd tell him to go F himself. I was so confused. Yeah,
that scene made zero sense, and I also made note that I hated that scene and thought it was stupid. And the fact that everybody hated her after she like apologized or whatever and was just trying to live her day, and everybody loved this condescending ass face that came over and like put on a fake smile. Oh, I hate it.
I love that the whole line behind her turned against her. It's like
it did. And I watched
who does she think she is?
I looked up this specific scene on YouTube after the movie, and all the comments are like, this is my favorite scene. Oh my gosh, this is so funny. I love this so much. And I'm like, what am I watching? Am I watching the same scene as everyone else? But I think it explicitly is a scene written for a Visa product placement. Like, mm-hmm. There's product placement all through this movie with the Starbucks, obviously AOL, the Visa cards, and there's got to be something else that I'm leaving off, but I feel like it's written for that because he like broadly flashes a Visa card right, you know, right at the camera. It just kind of feels like that's what it's for. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Oh yeah, I think the product placement was intentional, especially with AOL and Visa. That seemed pretty overt.
But anyway, getting back to Tom Hanks, I think that like he does a very fun balance because he's great with his aunt and his brother, and he is kind of a ruthless businessman, but at the same time he kind of resents himself for it at times. That's the other side of his life, is sort of wishing that like he, you know, he's more sensitive than the person he has to be in his everyday life.
Nah, I have issues with that, but we'll get there in a
minute. Yeah. All right, what about Meg Ryan? She plays a completely different type in this. She is pretty consistent, whereas Joe kind of plays a two-face to a degree, not always mm-hmm. intentional. But she's kind of like literally the shop girl next door, which is Meg Ryan's bread and butter at the time, I feel like. What are any notes on her? Perfect.
I thought she was really nice in this. She's, I appreciated.
Home run. I think that this time
she's so.
Go ahead, David.
Or she romanticizes him so much, and I appreciate that because it feels very realistic to what people do with an anonymous kind of person or an online figure. Of course, she's going to build him up into the perfect person and want it to all work out. And she just plays so well off of his slightly more cynical approach. Like, it's interesting because he's not fully cynical toward it, but he still offers a contrast. So I don't know. I thought she is perfect in that role.
Yeah, agreed.
Agreed. She's really nice.
One of my favorite interactions they have, and again, where Tom Hanks really shows that he's an asshole, is when he just scoops up all the caviar from that table, that plate on the table, and just because he wanted to, like, he did it to make her mad. And I was like, you're a jerk. You are an actual jerk. Because that's actually not for you.
He is. I don't like the businessman version of Tom Hanks. Yeah. And my issues with the overall story come from he knowingly, like, he finds out, he learns the whole story early, like, before
right.
she pieces all of the evidence together. And despite knowing, he still is on a Shark Tank mission to ruin her life.
I know.
and take everything from her with no care in the world, despite the fact that he knows that he's in love with that woman.
It's not personal.
And he's still like, yeah, but I'm going to ruin you and the legacy your mom left, and I'm going to step on its neck and choke it and rip it out page by page.
And then
he has the audacity at the end to be like, you have the ability to forgive a person for standing
you up. I sure wish
you
would.
But you can't forgive me for putting you out of business, despite the fact that you're also the dude that
stood
her up.
You're both guys.
Like, what are you doing?
You're both guys. It was very confusing.
No winning argument whatsoever, Joe. None.
I want to come back around to Meg Ryan again, but at the same time, yes, Garrett, you're hitting my exact thing of like, I feel like what he does by the end, by the time he learns, what he does is like deceptive, and I feel like it shouldn't be romantic, but apparently it is to every woman I've ever met who loves this movie so much, and the men who love this movie. It feels like he's like totally manipulating her by being both her best friend and confidant and her best friend and new confidant, where like he's talking about the conversations he's having with her. He's feeding lines to himself to make himself seem better or whatever. Like, it seems so weird to me.
I see what you're saying.
Just give her no situation.
In that 98 mindset, I can see how you would think like, oh, that is a grand romantic gesture. But in a 2024 mindset, I think, oh, that is predatory behavior and shows a clear pattern. That's like, I've seen Investigation Discovery. I know where this goes.
And like you
but
said,
that didn't exist back then.
Like you said, though, it's compounded with the idea that like he's running her out
There's
of business,
like 12
and then
seasons
he realizes
of Catfish on MTV.
And then he realizes that he's running her out of business, right? Like, and he makes no effort to be like, the woman I love, turns out I'm ruining her life. Should I stop? No,
no thought.
He's just no.
He goes, no, I shouldn't.
No, I'll just.
It's the principal Skinner meme. No, it's the children who are wrong.
No, I'll just play both sides of her love life against each other, and then she'll be somehow. She says, "I was hoping it was you. Were you?
Yeah.
I don't know. So
when
confusing.
Were you gonna say that?"
But at the same time,
because real life version of him for her insufferable.
I mean, I understand
until the turn. Like, he turned eventually, but like he could have. When he went there knowingly to stand her up and be late, he could have been like, "Hey, I know that we've had our differences, but also, this is me."
Yeah,
and you know, you could have had that.
I know. I keep thinking by the end, he has made both versions of him into an asshole. It's like, why did you sabotage both versions of you?
Yeah, it's.
But then she loved him anyway, which is great. This only works in the movies, and that's why it's fine.
My wife loves this movie, and I appreciate her. Her argument for it was he felt like he needed to earn her trust enough for her to believe that he was actually the guy on the other side of these letters, or the other side of these emails. And I get that. Like, he had to undo all of the awful that he was in person to her. But still, I feel like he could just, at some points, he could have just come out and said, "By the way, I'm the guy you've been communicating with. I realize I need to earn your trust back." I don't know. Right. Anyway.
I know. I was told the same thing by my partner. So, like, I respect the argument. And it sounds like we're hating on this movie, and
I'm just confused.
I found it very charming and fun. Yeah, I just have questions about the story. I just have questions about the story.
I just don't feel like it would work if I tried it.
That's what it comes back to, right? That it's like, but this isn't real life, and we all know that, right? 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 Right?
Yes. Sometimes the journey is perfectly fine.
Yes.
Right. Because I'm like, yeah, clearly this would never work in real life, at least not in today's world. Again, it's just we know too much now.
But also, I think it's like, so I think I got jittery earlier when I was trying to talk about Meg Ryan, but I thought she was so, she seemed so smart in this movie. Like, she seemed like she couldn't bring herself to be bold enough to stand up for herself. And when she finally got that ability, it was like the other half of her character really unlocked. And she was now sort of who she always was supposed to be. Like, she was kind and she was sweet and she was smart, but now she's you know, she's assertive and she's strong. And if she had wanted to, she could have told Tom Hanks to screw off at the end of this movie. And everybody would have been like, yeah, you tell him, or whatever. You know, it could have gone either way. But I also loved, I mean, it was what she needed in order to have this great mutual breakup with Greg Kinnear, which was one of my more favorite scenes of the movie, too, was the mutual breakup with Greg Kinnear, who was like super Luddite boyfriend, afraid of technology, was like his opening thing is, hey, hun, do you see they had to get rid of solitaire on military bases because the men were just wasting so much time on the game. It's the end of Western society, I'm telling you. And I'm
I just rolled my eyes thinking, solitaire.
He sucks.
I want to get back to Meg Ryan, but can we veer off into the side characters? Because I
love
really
to.
Thought they were really crazy. I loved Greg Kinnear. Mm-hmm. I thought he was so much fun. I always love Greg Kinnear when he shows up as a side character. Such a good character.
Actor. His obsession with himself is incredible.
Yes.
It's so silly, and I loved it. The breakup scene was weird and funny, but like I got whatever. I don't care.
I don't love you.
And then Parker Posey.
Yes.
Parker Posey is Joe's significant other. I think there was a line that was, she makes coffee nervous. And that was a good way to describe her. And I thought she was crazy. But I didn't like that she just kind of disappeared, I felt like.
This is a classic movie where all the secondary characters just disappear. Like Dave Chappelle, when he sees that Meg Ryan, like the Catholic, I think that's his, I could be wrong, I think that's his last scene, when he sees that Kathleen Kelly is actually Shop Girl, he's like, you don't like that Kathleen Kelly chick? No. I don't think you're gonna like
Dave
her,
Chappelle,
right?
Dave Chappelle disappears that's his last overnight.
Scene. It's like, he's and that's the same with
the movie.
That's the same with almost everybody. Like, everybody just up and gone. By the time that they start having their relationship, she has no other friends. Like, Steve Zahn disappears, Dabney Coleman disappears, yeah, everybody just gone. So it's very that happens sometimes with like with movies like this, but I don't think it necessarily detracts. It was just kind of funny that like all of a sudden gone, everybody's disappeared.
Going back to Meg Ryan just real quick, I really enjoyed the scene where she laid into Joe. Mm-hmm. And was just like, you know, I wrote down, my note is, she's pretty mean to him, to be honest with you. But when she called him a suit, he needed to hear it. He is gleefully trying to ruin people's lives. Not cool. And that's like, I felt like she did go too far. But I think that, you know, again, David, you mentioned that she found that regret. And so she was able to find that line of being able to be assertive. But sometimes you have to cross that line in order to find it. So mm-hmm. I really appreciated that scene because throughout the movie, she is so, you know, I think that it would be almost mean to call it a stereotype, but like, you know, ditzy and nice and sweet and kind of people might see her as gullible, mm-hmm. but she's just a nice person who is caring about her community and trying to deliver something in a caring person. And so she doesn't want to be mean. She has no need to be mean. She wants to give people the benefit of the doubt until she just meets somebody who just pushes every single button in a way that she can't handle it and feels that regret and guilt because she's a nice person. So
exactly.
I really just thought that was a well-acted scene.
Incidentally, the movie did make me think of The Banshees of Inisherin, where she was like, my mother was nice. People remember her. And then she made me think of The Banshees. My mother was nice. Yeah. You know, and Brendan Gleeson's like, who cares? You know, she didn't make music or whatever. No, but yeah, and then I love sort of how much her character cares about this sort of stuff. The funny thing is like Joe, he doesn't know it yet, but in about 10 to 15 years, the internet that he loves so much is going to drive his own companies out of business. Because, like, current day, big bookstores, like, you know, are struggling to keep their own building, big buildings open because online is just taking so much of the business away from even the regular brick and mortar bookstores. Or, I mean, the big brick and mortar bookstores.
Tonight at 6, Amazon is killing your local Barnes & Noble.
Exactly. Now, you know, so, and even, I mean, even those stores own online systems are like, you know, like you go to the store and they'll tell you like, yeah, you probably just need to get it online. We don't have it here in the store. So, interesting. I was laughing about, it was kind of ironic to watch from the 2020 mindset, that part of the story of this big box chain is running the little store out of business. Well, now those big box chains are struggling to stay in business. So,
yeah. I don't even know where to transition from that.
I was going
to
say, do you want to talk about Josh? I know you noted that you really like that Godfather sequence.
Yeah, it just seemed like I didn't know how to bring that up then.
I don't really have much else to say, so we can transition to whichever way.
Yeah, well, I got this is something we talked about last week. I got a little breakout I want to talk about. Something we talked about off mic last week, and that is the co-star age gaps.
Josh, do you want to make a note to cut some of that out?
Yeah.
Well, we're at like the 28 minute mark in this one or something. 29.
Yeah.
Okay. Roughly 29 minute mark.
Yeah, well, before you start, I was just going to say, yeah, I just didn't want to go from Meg Ryan to, well, back to Tom Hanks. So,
yeah.
It felt like unnatural, so I just won't bring it up.
Yeah. No, the best part of that for me was when she asked Greg Kinnear, like, you know what it means to go to the mattress? And he goes, yeah, the Godfather. And she's like, oh, yeah. That to me is that's the great follow up on that line. Okay, here we go. Hang on. Here's something that I wanted to talk about, and this is something we kind of talked about a little bit off mic last week, but that's something that this is a conversation that comes up a lot in Hollywood movies, but specifically with rom-coms, and that's the age gap between co-stars. And we've done this is our fourth film of the month, and I just want to read you some stats here about the age gaps between the co-stars and the movies we've watched. So going back to Return to Me, David Duchovny was 39, Minnie Driver was 29. In Her, Joaquin Phoenix was 39, Scarlett Johansson was 29. In When Harry Met Sally, Billy Crystal was 40 years old when that movie was made, and Meg Ryan was 27. Now, this movie has the best gap. Meg Ryan was 37 when this movie came out, and Tom Hanks was 42.
Yay. So,
interestingly enough, it's only a 5-year gap there instead of, 13 between Billy Crystal and 10 in the other cases. But it's still interesting that Meg Ryan is a leading lady in this at 37, which is still younger than all the men have been in each and every one of these. And that's, I don't really know exactly where I want to go with that, but how do you guys feel about the conversation of these age gaps when it's 10 plus years in some of these cases?
I think the strangest thing that you didn't even mention, and I see why not, but Parker Posey is 29 in this movie, and she plays Tom's girlfriend.
Yeah.
So, you know, talk about an even more significant age gap.
I wonder what Greg Kinnear was. Hang on. I can look that up.
I'm sure he's probably close to Meg Ryan's age, I would guess.
He's probably between 35 and 40, I'd imagine.
Yeah. So it's definitely strange. I mean, there's always been a weird age things with casting, particularly when it comes to men versus women, because pretty much like you implied, David, women are considered were considered older on screen, a lot younger than they should be. Mm-hmm. Like, exactly right. Like, 37 for a leading lady in 1998 is like, whoa, okay.
Like,
yeah, I'm stunned.
Yeah, like, this is almost like this is a movie for the middle-aged as far as Hollywood's concerned, when you have a leading lady that's 37. Like, all the other films we examine, and we can go down countless rom-coms of the 90s, 2000s, and 2010s, and, you know, under 30, that's the goal. Preferably, I guess, between 25 and 30 for most of them. But it's just kind of crazy how Hollywood, it's been enough time. They're aware of this, and they just still do it. I don't know I don't know what it is that tells them, oh, if a woman's over 30, like, the movie's not going to sell, because clearly it will. Like, this movie sold well. I don't know. Interesting. Baffling.
Yeah.
Can't explain.
Yeah, there's no reason for it other than men rule Hollywood, middle-aged older men rule Hollywood, and they fantasize about younger women. Yep. I mean, I feel like that's probably most of it.
Yep, pretty
it's true. And
right.
If this film hadn't been directed by a woman, Nora Ephron, right. Yeah. This may not have happened.
You're also right.
Not every single scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go ahead and wrap up this discussion. Let's go around and share our final thoughts on the movie, and then we'll move on into the Letterboxd game here. I'll start. Being that this was a repeat viewing for me, my opinion on it hasn't changed. I love it. Yes, there are some things to nitpick on, but that's part of what makes movie watching fun to me. It's fun to pick on how mean Tom Hanks is sometimes, how unnecessarily mean sometimes, and to pick on some story aspects. All that to say, it's a 5-star movie for me. I can't. What?
Hey.
I enjoy it. I have a 5-star experience every time.
Well, I'm a little shocked.
That's all that matters.
For me,
you're probably a little wrong.
I thought this movie was overall very good. I have to admit, I don't really understand some of Joe's motives towards the end. But overall, like, I was never bored. It was very interesting. I thought the movie handled itself very well. I would watch this again, so I'll give it 4 stars.
Wow. Man. I'm surprised.
I don't know. I feel weird about this because, again, as much as I may have picked apart some of the story, it was all in good fun. Mm. It was not me sitting here being like, oh, I didn't like it. Why? No, it was in good fun and good in jest because what they delivered was an enjoyable movie and a good time. Good people delivering good performances in a fun little rom-com romp, and I very much enjoyed it. Having said that, because this was a first-time watch for me, it didn't necessarily have that same kind of, you know, nostalgic feel or didn't have that same kind of a connection. And so I also found it to be very good, which on my scale is a 3.5. And there's nothing wrong with that. It is a very strong 3.5.
In my opinion, most movies are 3.5.
Nothing wrong with a 3.5.
See, for me, most movies are 2.5. So
that's too much. Maybe beyond the pale.
Everybody's got their own system. That's what matters. Okay, well, that's our reviews. Let's get into our Letterboxd game here. In the Letterboxd game, we take a look at some of the most popular reviews of the movie of the week on Letterboxd, our favorite movie-based social media app. And we read a few reviews, we think about it, and we take a guess at what we think the average score of the movie is. So we're going to start with David this week, right? You're going to make the first guess because somehow our 2-time reigning champion is losing losing.
Well, do you want to read some popular reviews first?
Yes, I do. Yes. So, to get things started, 3 stars. Tom Hanks trying to convince Meg Ryan that The Godfather is the most important element of pop culture via instant messaging is every dating app interaction with men I have ever had. 5 stars.
Roman Empire, they say.
5 stars. The movie equivalent of a large cup of tea. Five stars. The scene where Meg Ryan and Greg Kinnear tell each other they aren't in love and then start gabbing is one of the best rom-com moments of all time.
Yeah.
That felt so much better
for them. Oh, my gosh. And then finally, 3.5 stars. Well, damn. I wish I had mail.
You've got mail. I wish I could do the voice.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so it's a classic. Think,
what's your guess going to be?
It's a classic by many people's standards. You know, a lot of people, the debate comes down between this and Sleepless in Seattle for Nora Ephron Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. I think, both in Joe's Volcano.
They were.
I'm going to say it 3.9.
Oh.
That's a big number.
It is a big number.
It's right in the middle of the show. It's the big number.
Who goes next? Is it me?
Oh, it's Garrett. Josh? Garrett's next.
No. Oh, okay.
Okay. See, I don't think it's... I mean, that's a big number. I am not that optimistic, just because our range is pretty big here. Josh gave it a 5, David gave it a 4, I was at 3.5, so I think it's going to be high, but I don't know. I was at a 3 point... my guess was like a 3.6, so I think I'm going to do that.
Oof. Oof, you guys have screwed me, I think. Screwed my
again, Pennypecker.
Because I don't want to go up. I don't even think I want to go up into four.
Gotta
guess. I'm gonna go with.
Clock's ticking.
I'm gonna go with 4.0. I know. I'm gonna go with 4.0.
I forced him up there.
You did. You forced it. Okay, let's see. Who is gonna be the winner? Oh my god. We don't have a direct hit, but we're very close. No. The winner this week is Garrett, because it is a 3.5, and that was my better instinct, and I went against it.
Wow. I'm actually shocked. Yeah.
You said, David, you felt like this is a perfect 3.5 movie, and you got it.
Well, I said most movies are a 3.5. How I think. You know, I think that, like, you know, in the large average of things, most movies are pretty good. But I am shocked, because I honestly thought this was going to be up there close to When Harry Met Sally, which we did last week, and that was like a 4.0. Wow. Okay. So another win for Garrett, which puts him at three. He had a direct hit the other week, and now he's got just one. So Josh and Garrett are tied at three. I'm still scoreless. Gotta pick up during the Oscar season here.
You're gonna have to do that.
Yeah, we're okay. Yeah, this will be fun.
Well, you mentioned it, David. It is Oscar season heating up, and that is why we're gonna announce that our next month's theme is Oscars. We talked about that at the top of the show for a little bit. Mm-hmm. But just to get you ready for it, we're doing Best Picture Month. Every movie we're doing has won Best Picture, I believe, right? Yeah, they all won. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we will have an Oscars show also during the month. I couldn't remember if we were doing a fan vote or not, but I think we decided not to.
Yeah, when you tack in the Oscar awards show, we've got it all covered.
Exactly. So
we're gonna
have
a reveal show coming up.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. We've already recorded our reveal show, so very excited to share that with you, where we will be revealing our picks to you for the month. And let me just tell you, a little teaser, it's kind of all over the place.
Very excited. In
places you wouldn't expect. Yeah, I think.
I think we did a good job.
We went out there.
I'm very proud of us, and I'm honest most of the time, and usually I think we fail.
Yeah.
And we cover a pretty good range of time, years.
Yeah, we cover a good range of time. We cover a good range of type film. It's going to be something. You just sign up now at SoManySequels.com or wherever you listen to podcasts, or on YouTube. Just search for So Many Sequels there in your YouTube app. We're trying to get up to 121 subscribers is our new goal for YouTube. So go there, hit that subscribe button. And of course, if you listen to the show in the podcast version, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if that's the app you use. That kind of helps us out a lot. You know, this is an independent organization.
It is.
We are not ad-supported or supported, really, at all. only emotionally, and that doesn't keep the lights on.
No.
Yeah, you can rest assured that any if you go to the Patreon, you choose this word. None of it goes really into our pockets. It all goes into just keeping the services that we use for this program, this podcast.
Basically, in service. Yeah. So leaving us reviews and stuff like that is a free way to help us a lot, because the more reviews we get, the more we get shown to people, and you know, word of mouth matters. So again, do all that stuff. You can find links to our social channels at SoManySequels.com. as well as all of our past episodes. We'll see you guys next time when we begin Oscars month. Bye.